Begins. Veda b'Moisha Roisha Hamatois. Moisha Rabbeinu spoke to Roisha Hamatois, which means the Nesiim. So Rashi picks up on why did Moisha Rabbeinu speak to the Matos, the Roisha Matos. Why did he speak to the Nesiim? These dinim of Neder that the Pasuk explains a little bit further. In other words, Rashi explains that every single din in the Torah was first described and explained over to the leaders, who then gave it over to the rest of Klal Yisrael. If so, this din of Neder and Nedorim, of making an oath or canceling an oath, is no different than anywhere else in the Torah. And therefore, for Moshe to speak to Roisha Hamatos, which in fact, in truth, always was that was the case, when it seems sort of unusual, when in fact it was the norm. So the question is asked by Rashi, why does it say Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Moshe, Roisha Hamatos, the heads of the tribes, when in fact every mitzvah was sort of given in that order? Yeah? So Rashi says, Cholak kovod Nesiim, that Moshe Rabbeinu gave kovod to Nesiim to teach them first, and then to Klal Yisrael, and every single mitzvah was the same. Ask Rashi, if so, why? By Nedarim, do we say that this din applies, that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to them first, when in fact every single time in the Torah Moshe Rabbeinu first spoke to the Nesiim and the rest of Klal Yisrael? So Rashi says, Umaro lo imrakan, says Rashi, to teach me a din, Shafonas Nedarim beyochid mumcha, that Haforas Nedarim, which means cancelling out of a Neder, can be done with a Yochid Mumcha, with a single Yochid, a single Talmud Chochem has ability, if he knows Halacha correctly, of Hilchus Nedarim, has ability to cancel out an oath. Now let's understand the background to it. Let's understand what's going on over here. A person has certain obligations that whether he likes it or not, he has to fulfill. A person may not eat treif, a person may not eat chazer, a person may not drive on Shabbos, there's a lot of things a person may do because the Torah told him to do so. There are many things that a person has an ability to make something that is mutter on himself, something that is perfectly permitted, he has ability to make that osa through the power of a neder. And he says, Kainam, I make this osa to me like a korban, I'll not eat this food. He has ability to make this osa thing mutter. Now, the Pasuk describes that there's a way of that being cancelled out. If a woman makes a neder and it affects a married life, then the husband has a right to cancel it out, the father has a right to cancel it out, and also there's a din of a yochid mumcha. And that means if a person goes to a Talmud Chochem has an ability to cancel out the oath, says Rashi, a loshon of haforas nadorim. A difference between matir and hafora. I'm not going to the halachas in the Dorim, look in the Gemara there, but Haforas Nedarim means the Zokain, or the Nosi, or the Talmud Chochem has ability to make a Neder as if it never happened. How does he do that? He says to the one who made the Neder, you made a Neder that you will never eat meat. Did you know that if you don't eat meat, you'll be starving? Did you know that you'll be laughed at if you don't eat meat? See, he makes a Pesach. No, I didn't know that. Oh, if you would have known, would you have made a neder? And the person says, honestly and sincerely, I would not have made a neder. Through that, through a Pesach, the Yochid has ability to cancel out the oath. That's a hafara. Okay? That's the way it works. So back to the question again. How does a person who is well versed in Torah have the ability to point out something to somebody else who he couldn't have made that before he made that decision? If you would have known that you'd be hungry, why didn't a person think of that beforehand? Why didn't a person think that people would laugh at him if he would not eat meat when everyone else is eating meat? Excuse me, I apologize to vegetarians. Yeah, but what's the idea over here? What is this Yochid doing that is able to reawaken the das, the knowledge, the wisdom of that person who made the neder and reverse the cycle? How does he do that? Now this is, Rabbi Yisai, a theme that goes all the way through this parasha. From beginning of Parashas Matos to the end, there's one central theme, and that is priority. If you want to remember it easily, Parshas matters is what really matters. It's all about priority. It's all about understanding clearly what is important and what's not important. What is Ikka and what is Tofel? This is this week's parasha. Let me give an example. The Pasuk says in Pasuk Vav, Pasuk Tes. V'biyoyim Shmaya Isha. Let's talk about a woman who makes an oath and her husband annuls the oath. Says the Pasuk, V'Hashem Yislachlo, and Hashem should give her kapara. Hashem should forgive her. Says Rashi, why does she need a kapara? What's going on over here? Says Rashi, V'meh HaKosam Adav. What's the Pasuk talking about? V'Isha Shenodro B'Nozir. A woman decided to become a Nozir. V'Shoma Bala V'Heifelo. And a Bala heard about it, and he said, no, I don't want to become a Nozir. And he was mefer the din. He was mefer the neder. He annulled the neder. V'hi lo yoda, and she never knew. V'iveres al nidro, and she transgressed on her neder. V'shoyse yain umtam lemesim, and she did something that, according to what she understood, was really wrong. In other words, she should not be drinking wine. She should not be coming in contact with dead people. She thought she was a Nazir, when in fact she wasn't at all. And therefore, says the Pasuk, which means even though she drank wine in a time when she was perfectly allowed to drink wine because she really wasn't a Nazir because her husband annulled her neder of being a Nazir, still she needs a kapara. Says Rashi, if people who drank wine when they already were annulled their oath need kapara, how much more so a person who drank wine when the oath was not annulled, how much did they need kapara? Now this is Rashi. Now this is based on a Gemara, and the Gemara says in Nozir Daf Chof Gimel Amud Aleph, Isho Haferam Vashem Yislach Lo, Rabbi Akiva. When Rabbi Akiva came to this pasuk, he started to cry. Rabbi Akiva began to cry. He began to weep, and he said like this: "Uma mishen eschaven lalis biyode bosa chazir." If already a person who had intention to eat bosa chazir, the flesh of a pig, va'ola biyode bosa tele, and it came into his hand, the flesh of a tele. Obviously, kosher meat. Ton kaporo slicha requires slicha and kaporo requires atonement. Hamischaven lalus biyode bosa chazir va'ola biyode bosa chazir. A person had the intention to eat pig and he actually ate pig. Al achas kama v'kama, how much more so? In other words, Rebbe Kiva learned from this pasuk that this woman did actually nothing wrong because she did not drink wine in her state of being a nazir because her husband annulled her oath. And still, she needs a kapara. How much more so if a person eats something when they shouldn't be eating it? It actually is tova issa. How much more so? And he began to cry. Now, this is Rabbi Akiva, who in other places was totally insensitive. He was the tough Rabbi Akiva. I'll give you a few examples. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. The last moments of Rabbi Eliezer. The Tanoim came to visit Rabbi Eliezer, and they saw Rabbi Eliezer in terrible state of suffering. Before his death, he was suffering. And the Tanoim stood around his bed and cried when they saw him suffering. And Rabbi Akiva laughed. Akiva laughed. So he said to Rabbi Akiva, why are you laughing? So he said, I'll tell you why. Rabbi Eliezer had an idyllic life. His wine never went sour. His oil never went off. His honey always was preserved. He had such a wonderful life, I was afraid that he goes to Olam Haba. And for Chas V'Chalila, if he has a small sin he'll need a kapara for, he'll get punished up there. And now that I see him suffering, I'm delighted that any slightest avera he may have done, he has kapara for now. And that's why I'm laughing. So even though the other one saw him in pain, and they saw him and he began to cry, Rabbi Akiva started to laugh. Another story. Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azari, Rabbi Gamliel were walking with Rabbi Akiva, and they heard the Romans 120 mil away, 120 kilometers away, were having a party. And they began to cry that the goyim have having such a good time when they're in the depth of such golus. And Rabbi Akiva began to laugh. So he said to Rabbi Akiva, why are you laughing? He said, if already oivrei ritzoinoi, those people who are going against the Kodesh Baruch Hu's will are having such a wonderful time down here, we who do his rotzen, we who fulfill his will, can imagine what schar we're going to get. Can imagine in Olam Haba what kind of wonderful, wonderful schar we're going to get, and how Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to reward us. Another example. They were crying and he was laughing. Rabbi Akiva himself, Rabbi Yisrael, on his last moments of his life, he was taken in, he's one of the 10 martyrs, and he was taken and his skin was being ripped off him with combs of iron. And his face was being ripped, the skin was being ripped off his face. And Rabbi Akiva was completely mellow. Rabbi Akiva was smiling. And his Talmidim said to him, Rabbi, at Khan! How long can you retain this composure for? So he said, what are you talking about? I've been waiting for this moment all my life. The apostle says, v'chol nafshecha, that you should love a Kodesh Baruch Hu with chol nafshecha, with all your nefesh. What does that mean? Even if it take away your nefesh, even if it take away your soul for the sake of Kiddush Hashem, that is how much you should love a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I've been waiting for this all my life. Now finally reached the time I should be upset. He completely ignored the pain and he smiled and he enjoyed the moment that he can love a Kodesh Baruch Hu v'chol nafshecha. So this Rabbi Akiva, who saw Rabbi Lezer suffering, who saw the Romans enjoying life, whose own skin ripped off his face, in all those moments he smiled. But when he came to a pasuk in the Torah that showed an element of shoigeg, an element of somebody doing something wrong, which wasn't that wrong, he began to cry. What's that about? What's that all about? So my Rebbe Ruchaim Kaufman used to say like this. Rebbe Akiva was the absolute paradigm of reason. He had clarity. What is real and what is not real? What is MS and what is Sheker? What is Ikka and what is Tofel? This Olam Hazeh, this world, is a real world for people who don't see the reality. People who know what's going on, people who have the vision, they see this world as only a proizdor, it's only a corridor to the Olam Haba. And therefore, every time when Rabbi Akiva saw the schar of Olam Haba, when he saw how Olam Haba is going to look, when he saw how his Rebbe is suffering for the sake of Olam Haba, when he saw what schar, what reward they will get in Olam Haba, if ready, the Romans are enjoying Olam Hazeh to this extent, when his own skin was ripped off because he knows that now he has a chelik, a bigger chelik of Olam Haba, b'chol nafshecha, that was what gave him pleasure. That's what gave him excitement. That's what he enjoyed. That is what his life was all about. Either pain and what you see other people pain. So what? That is not real. That's not real. That is just a. It's ridiculous to cry, to moan on something that is so temporary. Big deal. And so Rabbi Akiva did not see pain in this world as something to cry about. He saw any lack of Olam Haba, any lack of what a chet can bring onto it. For example, this pasuk, where a person does a chet, and it isn't such a chet, but the person could have been more sensitive, and he could have done something that chalila would not have needed a slicha, that is when he began to cry, because he realized that this person has a lack in Olam Haba that is going to go on forever and ever, perpetual loss, and that is worth crying over. The kasher is, though, what exactly is this pasuk teaching us? What exactly do we know from this pasuk that we don't know early on in the Torah? A woman thinks she's a nazir. She isn't, because her husband annulled her oath. She drank wine. Drinking wine at that stage was perfectly permitted because she was not a nazir. She didn't know that she drank wine, so she needs a kapara. Isn't that a case of a shogeg? Isn't that a case where a person didn't realize it's Shabbos and really is Shabbos? Or a person didn't realize that this malacha is on the lamites malachas? I mean, well, isn't this, you know, and he needs kapara for that. If a person's machal Shabbos b'shogeg, you have to bring a korban chatos. So what exactly is lying in this posuk? What exactly is over here that made Rabbi Akiva cry, triggered off an understanding they did not understand beforehand? So there's a lot of different mafarshim, a lot of different explanations. I saw a very beautiful pshat in Rabbi Hirsch Peber says like this. And this seems to be a machlekus in Mekubalim, as follows. We know that there were 10 Harugim Malchus. There were 10 Tanoim who were killed through the history. We say this very heart-wrenching, very sad one of the kinnas we say on Tisha B'Av, and on Yom Kippur we say it. Asara Gemachal, the 10 people who were killed by the Roman king. And Chazal bring down that they were a kapora for the 10 sons of Yaakov who were involved in Mechiras Yosef. Okay, involved in Mechiras Yosef. So the Mefarshim asks, but the Zohar Kodesh asks, the Pasuk says, Layumsa Ovis Abonim, Abonim Layumsa Lovis. We don't find that children died because of the parents' sins when they're already adults. So how was it that these Soru Gemalchus, these 10 Tanoim, generations and generations later, died for the sins of the 10 of the Shvatim, the 10 of the sons of Yaakov who did a chet by Mechiras Yosef? So Zohar Kodesh brings down that they didn't die for the chet, for the sin of their great-grandparents. They were in fact the neshamas of those Shvatim. So those ones who died, who had kapara then by Surah Gemalchus, were actually the neshamas of the Shvatim who did the chet of Mechiras Yosef. So their kapara took place in their very own neshama. Okay? It's also brought down that Rabbi Akiva was the neshama of Shimon. He was the neshama of Shimon, which is interesting, which is different to other Mukabalim. They say that Rabbi Akiva was Kaviyoch of Rabbi Yisrael, but that's because he was the neshama of Shimon. Okay, and that is why, since Shimon was involved, V'yemi Ishel Ochiv, one said to the brother, let's go and sell him. Who's Ishel Ochiv? Was Shimon to Levi. It was really his idea. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva actually had the most severe punishment of the Asura Gemalchus, because he represented the neshama of Shimon. Now let's understand carefully. The Mechira of Yosef, the selling of Yosef, was it really bad? Was it really bad? Yosef himself said later, don't worry about it. You thought it was bad. Hashem meant it for the good, is only that I should get down to Mitzrayim and be able to prepare a place for you to come to Mitzrayim and to become, live here. You didn't do anything bad. In other words, the result of this Mechiras Yosef was actually a wonderful thing. It brought Yosef down to Mitzrayim, and after all those years he became the king and was able to supply Klal Yisrael and put the setting for Klal Yisrael. It wasn't that bad. Therefore, Mechiras Yosef wasn't that bad. So what does Shimon really do? From this pasuk we learn that it doesn't have to be that the result is bad. Even if the result is not bad. For example, over here, this woman drank wine, and it's not a bad result, because drinking wine when she wasn't a nazir isn't terrible. But what is bad? The bad is a machshava, even if you don't do something bad, just a bad machshava is bad enough. The machshava of this woman drinking the wine, thinking that she's going against her nazirus, that itself is bad, even if the result isn't that bad. The action of selling Yosef is bad. The machshava is bad, even if the result of Yosef being sold to Mitzrayim because of that, and for him and for Klal Yisrael being a wonderful thing, wasn't that bad. Rabbi Akiva, who was a neshama of Shimon, cried over this pasuk when he had this new realization of how he has to do more tshuva. How even a result, a good result, is terrible if the machshava was bad in the first place. This is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who changed his life around from being an Amor Oretz to one of the greatest Tanoim, and Moshe Rabbeinu did not understand, the Medrash says, what he was darshaning. Rabbi Akiva was the Tanoim, unbelievable, 24,000 Talmidim, and built up Klal Yisrael again, was somebody who had one element of truth. He had the middah of being able to identify the real from the false, to be able to identify that this world is not the real world, and therefore suffering in this world isn't that terrible. But a nekudah, an extra element of Yiras Shamayim, an extra element of a realization of what it can affect, Olam Haba, that is something that he cried about. That is something that really affected him. This was Rabbi Akiva. And this is this week's parasha. This week's parasha is attempting to identify the real from the false. So we have this, as you mentioned now, by Nedarim. And this parasha carries on. A Yochid Mumcha, within the Dorim, we asked beforehand, how does this Talmud Chochem, how is he able to identify that this oath is not an oath? This is a Kleach of maturity that Torah brings on a person who's a Talmud Chochem. A person does something and he makes an oath. He makes a neder. Oh, he makes a neder and he feels very spiritual. And then he's not able to keep it. And he goes to the Yochid, and the Yochid said to him, "You're making a mistake. If you would have known, would you have done it?" He finds in the Kudah, he finds that element that the person saw as important as unimportant. This Talmud Chacham is able to identify that it's more important for the person not to have the neder than to have the neder. In other words, the koyach of nedarim that is able to be annulled for a yochid mumcha is the ability for yochid mumcha to see through the elements of what is really important to that person's life. If that person would realize how important it was, he would never have done it. And therefore, what you made important isn't really important. That is this week's parashah. And therefore, the neder, a neder is something that is done through yochid mumcha. It is a concept of maturity. It's a concept of able to look through and see what's important and what's not important. That is a koyach of a Talmud Chacham. That is a koyach of a Nasi and a Yochid Mumcha. That is a koyach of this week's parasha, to be able to look through all the way through this week's parasha and see what's important and what's not important. We see that later on, in Mamash, the next parasha, talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a command to Moshe Rabbeinu to go and make Nekoma on the Midianim. Go and make Nekoma on the Midianim. Go and destroy them for what they did to you. It's a revenge attack. Go and destroy them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Achat to Osif Alamechel." After that, you're going to die. Moshe Rabbeinu, my life, I can teach Torah. Fantastic. Let me spend time. I can teach Torah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will wait a few months. I'll live a few more months and then I'll go and make war. No, immediately Moshe Rabbeinu went and commanded Klal Yisrael. And the pasuk talks about exactly how he put together 1,000 from each tribe, and they went along and they killed them. They had a fantastic battle and they killed Bilam finally, and the parasha carries on, and they took all the shalal, makol makoch, took all the loot and the booty and everything, they brought it back, and then they split. And then the pasuk says the halachas of hagola, halachas of how to kasher things, how to take things from a state of treif to make it tohu. If you have something that went through fire, a spit or something that was used on a fire, you've got to put it back into fire. Something used in water, put in water. And we had the psukim over there of Haggadah. Later on, the parasha carries on and talks about how they split up the spoils according to different percentages within the people went out to war, etc. And then right at the end of that parasha, it says that this. The Yikruva on Moshe Bakudim Ashla Alfe Hatzavo, they came to him, who the people who were in charge, Sorry Rof and Sorry Hameyos, the people who were in charge. The Yomro Moshe Avadechon Nosu Esresh Anshia Mochama Ashvilin Vali Nifka Vemenu Ish. Right? So it's brought down. What is the conversation for Nifka Nimenu Ish? What's it talking about there? So listen to this. Very interesting. So bear with me a second. And the Potter carries on and it says, "V'nakrim is korban Hashem." And we want to bring a korban to Kodesh Baruch Hu. "Lechape al nafshi seinu lefnei Hashem." We want to bring a kapara to Kodesh Baruch Hu. In other words, the leaders of Klal Yisrael who went out, who led them into battle, came back after all this whole story of splitting up the spoils and everything else and the Haggadah, they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, "We need a kapara." What was this kapara all about? What was this all about? So it's Moshe Rabbeinu, they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Gemara Shabbos brings down Nafsamach Beis Amud Aleph. Moshe Rabbeinu sees his whole group coming together looking very, looking that one or two tshuva. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, "I see that perhaps you misbehaved. Just like there were times when Klal Yisrael misbehaved with Bnei Midian, maybe you misbehaved again." So the answer back to him, "Nifkad mimenu ish." No, we're not losing any men. In other words, we did not involve ourselves in any avera whatsoever. Okay. So what happened? But they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara says, "Omruloi." even though we did not do any Averis, active Averis, there was a Hirhur Avera. There were the elements of Hirhurim, of illicit thoughts that we did not prepare ourselves before battle to be able to fight against, and that we were, we unfortunately transgressed. There were Hirhurim Avera. Okay? The kasha is, we're dealing here with tzaddikim, people who went out to war. They were chosen from Klal Yisrael for the tzidkus. They came back, and Baruch Hashem, no avera was done. But they felt they could have done better with the hirhurim. Why wait all the way to the end of Perek Lamed Aleph, a long, long perek that talks about all that happened with the war? Why did it not talk? This is talking about the beginning of the war started in beginning of Perek Lamed Aleph. Right, this is about 50 pesukim later. They start talking about going to Moshe Rabbeinu and asking him about tshuva. Why didn't they do it as soon as they came back from the war? Asa Kodesh Shorim. Why begin as soon as they come back? They should go to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, Moshe Rabbeinu, we need kapara. Who had a hurry tshuva? What's all that about? Says the Kodesh Shorim. Only after they had the parasha of Hagola, only after the pasuk describes of how a doimeim article, and doimeim in English.
Inanimate
object. Yeah, an inanimate object, a metal object, can actually look perfectly clean, but inside the walls there are bleus, there are little particles of treif. They have to be flushed out, they have to be cooked out, they have to be taken out, and they need a serious burning out, and that is just an object with no yetzahara, no nothing real deep connection. How much more so a neshama, a person who has a neshama, who has a chelik elakayim mal, how much more does that need to be purified if it has been in any way tarnished, in any way taken in any bilis, any bad particles of tumah? And therefore they learnt from the element of doing tahara, of doing libun, of burning out the bad of a kli, and they said, if that's the case, how much more our neshama? These people were not concerned about the money. They gave all the money. They were concerned about hirhuri tshuva, hirhurim, small hirhurim, and it wasn't something they did such a thing about, because otherwise could have learnt about it beforehand. But this sensitivity that they learnt extra, something a little bit extra that they learnt towards from another halacha, was able to inspire in them the ikar of life, of being absolutely kodesh and dovet to kodesh baruch. And the parasha carries on, and the parasha talks about the Bnei God of Bnei Reuven. Yeah? Umikne Rav hoi the Bnei God of Bnei Reuven, a lot of cattle. Vayira es Eretz Yazeh and Eretz Gilad, and the place was a perfect place for them to have cattle. Vayivoyu Bnei God of Bnei Reuven and said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Atoros v'divoyin, everything is wonderful, fine. Vayomer mitzon achein be'inecho, if I favor in your eyes, let us have this piece of land. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu says back to them, how can you do such a thing? Well, you're going to stay here and you're not going to go out to war. And he said, no, not at all. We will go out to war. We'll fight with them. And then the Pasuk says, and I have a whole long, long, long Musa Shmuz. And then they said in Pasuk Tezayin, Vayikshe Elo V'yomer, Gidroi Tzoy Nivdel El Mekneinu Poi. Let us build, Gidroi Tzoy, let us build a Geder, like a pens for our sheep over here. Va'orim Letapenu, and cities for our children. And we'll go out to fight. Moshe Rabbeinu says back to them, and he says to them in Pasuk Choftalud, Benu lachem, build for yourself orim letapchem, cities for your children, ugedeiros letsoinachem, and pens for your sheep. So the Medrash says that this was a Musa Shmuz to Bnei God Bnei Reuven. Bnei God Bnei Reuven, you are talking about building out first pens for your sheep and then building up cities for your children. Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, no, first build cities for your children and then pen for your sheep. Why? What's a Musa Shmuz? So on that we learn the Medrash brings down Melamed. So you see from there, Rashi says already, Chosim hoyu al memoinom yoisa mibneihem ubneisehem. They cared more about their money, and that's why they prioritize and say we'll build pens for our sheep more than their own children. The Medrash says they're not chos, chavivim, they were more beloved, their money was more beloved to them than their own children. And that's why they mentioned first, let's build pens for our sheep, and then talked about their own children. And that Moshe Rabbeinu says, what, are you guys crazy? First build cities for your children, then care about your money. What's more important? Now, Rabbi, so what are we talking about over here? We're dealing with Bnei God, Bnei Reuven. We're dealing here with a generation that have been educated by Moshe Rabbeinu. People who are coming to Eretz Yisrael, the greatest generation that there ever has been in history. The greatest generation has ever been in history. They've been in the yeshiva with Moshe Rabbeinu all these years. And these people listen to a whole Musa Shmuz and they agreed with them. They're dealing with very, very wonderful, wonderful generation, wonderful people. And these people love their money more than their children. How can you say such a thing? Which person today would admit such a thing? He loves their money more than their children. And here, you know, with a blitzat pair, with a slip of the tongue, they mention that they love their money more than children. What happened over here? So the Chiddush Aleph says like this. Chas v'chalila, can we believe for a second that these people, that Bnei God, Bnei Reuven, actually began their life with loving money more than their children? Chas v'shalom. What happens? A person has a wonderful intention. A person wants to educate his children. What does he want to do? He wants to support his family. He wants to be able to bring a nice, easy panosa. That he doesn't have to work too hard, that he can just bring his sheep and the sheep can just pasta, and he can learn with his children and educate a family of Tamei Chachamim. Be with his kids. And that is what the intention was. Intention was, we have a lot of sheep, we can come wealthy, we don't have to work too hard, and we can be home with our kids. And that is what the intention was. What happened? Once a person, in a very short period of time, once a person prioritizes that right now I've got to focus on money, the money becomes the ikkar. Money takes over his ambition to the extent that is what he actually loves more at this present time. He loves his money more than his children. Let me give an example. A few examples. In the Second World War, it was clear to many people that the risks were extremely high. The risks were extremely high of them staying in Germany or in Hungary or in Austria, and things were not looking good. And they could run away penniless. Many of them could run away penniless, refugees, and they could survive. Their families could survive. They could not separate themselves from the money. They could not separate themselves from the money, and therefore they stayed there, and the money got taken away, and the families were destroyed. There were people who were able to see, no, let's leave this all behind. It's most important is for our life of our family, we're able to leave this behind. But what kept many people behind was the love, the money, more than their family. There's a beautiful clip of Ovis Obonim. Ovis Obonim is this wonderful organization of encouraging parents, fathers to learn with their sons. And there's one, and it was inspired by a story, a true story, that there's one son who, his father was a high-powered lawyer, and he was busy in the office during the week and the weekends. He was also busy, and the son would come to him and said, "Daddy, can we please learn?" He said, "Son, I'd love to learn, but I'm busy right now. I really can't. I've got a phone call coming in. I've got to send this email. I've got to do this text. I'm very sorry. I'd love to." And this goes on, and this carries on day after day after day. Eventually, the son comes into the office, knocks on the door very meekly, walks into his father's office, and he has his piggy bank. And he opened up his piggy bank and he pours the money all the way across the desk. And he said, "Daddy, you told me yesterday that you earn $100 an hour. I've saved here for last year $50. Could I please learn with you for half an hour?" Does his father love his child more than his money? Of course he does. Of course he does. If this child needs an operation, he'd spend any money in the world to save him. But in day-to-day life, one becomes warped. What's a ick and what's a toffle? You're going out with your kids, and it's so painful to see. It mamish hurts. It hurts. You're going out with your kids. You're spending time with your wife. Family time. Family time. And you're texting. And there's a phone call, and the phone call takes priority to listening to your kids. Turn off the phone. You know, if a phone call comes through, be happy that a phone call came through, because you can turn it off and say, "Now I'm learning with you. Now I want to speak to you." Turn it off. You are more important than the kids. That is priority. B'nai Gad and Reuven had the best intentions to educate their children, to be able to finance a good family setting, but it took over, money took over. And that was a tragedy of B'nai Gad and Reuven. Even after they came back, after years of fighting in Eretz Yisrael, they came back and did not recognize their kids. The kids had not had an education. They came back and the kids looked like goyim, Novi says. Did they gain anything by it? Years and years later, they went to Golos first. Many, many years before the rest of Klal Yisrael, they went into Golos first. Because it did not make the Ikka and the Tofel. It's about priorities. It's about focusing on what's really important. Not making steers. Knowing what it's all about. There's a beautiful story I saw this week. It's a very nice thing. It's called Menucha. It's a salon that comes out on Shabbos. It's a fantastic story. Seeing a Gadol B'Torah. There's an American Jew whose son was approaching Bar Mitzvah age. And his father wanted to take him to Rav Shmuel Vozner, the Gadol HaDor, in Bnei Brak, and that he should put tefillin on, Hanochas tefillin, on the first day in the basic medrash of Rav Shmuel Vozner. So the father prepared the boy, bought the tickets. Rav Shmuel Vozner said he'll see him, bought the tickets, bought the tefillin, getting prepared. Rav Shmuel said to him a few days before, do me a favor, just phone me up a few days before, just to make sure I'm around, you never know, and you know, we can confirm then. He phones up a week, 2 weeks before that they're supposed to be traveling, and he said, Rav Shmuel, just to remind you that Be'ezus Hashem, I'm coming with my son, with Nocha Tefillin. So Rav Vozner, Rav Vozner says to him, I thought it's not a good idea, I think you should cancel the ticket. He said, what do you mean, why? He said, because you're going to be going on a plane, you're going to be going in the airports, you're going to be traveling. It's the middle of the summer now. What is your child going to see? You're going to see such terrible things. Of course, it's wonderful to put on tefillin, and it's a wonderful thing for a Rav to put on tefillin, to see a Rav and have chashivas for tefillin. But at what expense? What expense? What's this kid going to do to his neshama to get all the way traveling through to Eretz Yisrael that the Rebbe should put on his tefillin? He can't. It's posh, it's not worth it, it doesn't add up. So the father says, I know, but my son's going to be very disappointed. He's been looking forward for the Rebbe to put on his tefillin. And it costs a lot of money. I paid thousands of dollars. So the father said, you know what? Rebbe Rosen said, like, take a picture frame and put inside those two tickets. And write underneath that we sacrificed these two tickets, which cost $2,000, in order that our dear son should not see forbidden things. That is the best bar mitzvah present you'll give to your son. That is priorities. Not making the ikka the tofel. Not making the tofel the ikka. Seeing the world in a light that is mature. Seeing the world in light of knowing what is important and what's not important. And that is matos. Matos is a neder. Knowing what's important and what's not important. That's Rabbi Akiva, who had the ability to see through that this world isn't that important. What's important is the next world. And therefore suffering this world, no. But a little extra nakud of Yiras Shamayim that could affect me in the Olam Haba, that is worth crying over. That is what these people came back from the Melchemes Midian, that they saw an extra element of Yiras Shamayim, that even here, hero, even a little particle of chet can go into neshama, can affect them, that they need tshuva to focus on that. B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven didn't get it, and they did not see the priorities, and Moshe Rabbeinu gave them musa for it. But we have to know that in our own lives, to be able to prioritize, be able to see really what matters, really what's important. And this is halacha lemaisa. Somebody told me that he did a certain job in a house, and he came into the house, and a father had just come back from America, and the father had brought back a signed baseball from the Yankees with all the original signatures on it. And the whole family are crowding around this baseball, and the awe and the love and the feeling of completely out of this world experience of touching a baseball that those baseball players played in America was like something that was completely transcending at a whole different level of living in this world. And there was almost tears in the eyes of the kids that they touched this ball with such awe, as if they were, you know, as if it was a chelik of a korban in a base of Migdosh, right? What are these kids going to be I guarantee you there'll be Yankee fans. Will there be Tamid HaChamim? Maybe. 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 It's not always a steerer. Maybe. But there will certainly be Yankee fans. What is our focus? What is important? We know when you come past and you see an unbelievable, beautiful car, and you start talking about this car on the Shabbos table, the kids are going to want nice cars. The kids are going to focus on, their chinuch is going to be based on, that's what impresses the adults. That is what my father looks up to. But if you don't, you come back from shul, you say, I told you, an unbelievable vault. I just saw this vault. And you're enthusiastic about that. That's not important. Big deal what car he has. That's not important. That is what creates gedolim. One of the most inspirational people in this generation, I would say, who had the money, were the Reichmans. Reichmans had an enormous amount of wealth. An enormous amount of wealth. In fact, you know, they'll said that the Canadian government asked them not to take too much money out of the country because it completely collapsed the Canadian economy. Huge, huge, hugely wealthy people. They did not know that they were wealthy. Kids did not know that they were wealthy. In fact, there's one of the Reichmans, I'm not saying which one. They live in a very, very hot place. I happen to know them well. They live in a place where it's a norm to have air conditioning. They did not have air conditioning in the house because if the kids go to yeshiva, it was a few years back, and it's not exactly now, it's a few years back, and they go to yeshiva, and yeshiva does not have air conditioning, they should not feel that it's more comfortable to be at home than to be in yeshiva. They should feel there's no difference. In yeshiva it's hot, and at home it's hot, and therefore they shouldn't feel that in any way to be at home is better than to be in yeshiva. That is why they were zeichah to have children to Tamid HaChamim. This is godless. This is godless. I have a family, you know, family friends with the family Wolfson. Also, Baruch Hashem, wonderful people. The father is a Talmud Chochem Otzum. A Talmud Chochem Otzum. He goes on the ski lift. He goes skiing with his family because that's what his family enjoy. On the ski lift, he's going up the ski lift for learning. His whole life is Torah. That's why he has children to Melech Chochemim. The priorities that we have is going to make the future generations. If we are able to know what's a ikka and what's a tofel, halacha lemaisa, if a father and a rebbe both require to be helped by a son stroke student, there's a chiyuv to help the rebbe before they help the father, because a rebbe brings it to olam haba and a father brings it to olam hazeh. Halacha lemaisa. What is the ikka? Is olam hazeh the ikka? Is olam haba the ikka? Is money the ikka or is Torah the ikka? That is Parshas Matos. What does really matter? That is this week's parasha.